Hey y'all, it's Kobe R. Rice, and I'm back again with another Creative Weekly Update. Except in this case, it's been 2 weeks instead of a week. But I warned you guys in the last podcast that I would probably be away for the next few weeks, in that I'll be doing updates, but they'll be coming probably every 2 weeks at this point, as opposed to every week. And that will probably continue on until I would say about May 7th. I don't know what the Monday is for that particular. Let me get my stuff straight before I just start popping off dates and talking all this stuff and I don't know what I'm talking about, etc., etc. Yes, oh, I was right. So you guys will probably get bi-weekly updates, or I guess, yeah, it's bi-weekly. I keep wanting to say bi-monthly, but I think that actually means every 2 months. I just need to get my life together. But I will probably be updating you guys every 2 weeks, more than likely until April 22nd, the earliest, and May 7th, the latest. So as of April 22nd, April 23rd, I should be back to our weekly schedule. But because that is like the last week of the semester and I have all these papers and stuff due and grading to do, I may still be on my bi-weekly schedule. So if I'm not back on a weekly schedule by April 22nd, April 23rd, then I will definitely be back on it by May 7th. Okay, so just FYI to you guys, if you were waiting for an episode last week and you happen to miss it, and you're like, hey, what the crap, Colby? That's because I am currently in rehearsal for our King Arthur production right now. And that is literally snatching out anywhere between 20 to 30 hours out of my week. So I just have to cut certain things down and cut them out so I can literally like stay on top of everything this semester. So speaking of, I will get to directing. I'm going to get to that last because that is like the biggest portion of the podcast this week. And it's been like the biggest portion of what I've been doing. So it's going to take the most amount of time. But let's get into really quickly just like our usual setup. I'm going to give you some updates as to what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks, what I will be doing for the next coming couple of weeks, and talking to you guys about directing, and then getting into the lesson of the week, which at this point in time, since I'm recording this real time, I think that the lesson I'm learning from directing right now is to trust my instincts and to assert my vision. And I think that's a huge, huge lesson that I've learned being in this process, but we'll get to that in just a minute. So let's jump into what I've been up to for the past 2 weeks. Aside from directing, graduate school is graduate school, and unfortunately it does not stop just because you are directing, or co-directing rather, a production on campus. So of course that makes things a little bit crazy, occasionally problematic, you know, and it just is what it is. But basically, in the past 2 weeks, the biggest thing that I've done was I've finished and submitted my prospectus for my MFA thesis, which was a major load off of my back, my heart, my mind, and off my plate. Because we had to not only essentially convince our advisors that our project was viable and related to generative dramaturgy, but also convince the rest of the committee of that. And for a while, as you guys might have known, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, I was vacillating between doing a translation of one of Alexandre Dumas's plays and doing my Shakespeare project. And I eventually ended up choosing the Shakespeare project, basically doing a rereading of Shakespeare's Roman history tetralogy, including Coriolanus, Julius Caesar, Antony and Cleopatra, and Titus Andronicus, doing a narrative rereading of those four plays, and also a metaphorical rereading of those plays as basically a metaphor for the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. And at first I was not going to do the Shakespearean project because As you guys know, I am super into adaptation, and I, at some point in the future, wanted to adapt that Roman history tetralogy into a film series, which, as of now, may just become like a TV series, so who knows. But I had such difficulties in the past with my program whenever I tried to bring my art projects into the realm of academia. Things have just kind of gone haywire because I can't really fully appreciate at this moment the way in which academia treats its approach towards making art versus the way artists treat their approach to making art. And because I'm very firmly an artist, just with like scholarly training, I did not want to start hating my project when I finally started to work on it in the context of academia. I did not want to come out of this final year of my degree having worked on the Shakespeare tetralogy only to come out of it completely hating everything that I've done towards the tetralogy, like basically hating the entire process, hating the way in which I have to view my project. I just didn't want academia and the ivory tower to basically like ruin my art. And of course I can go on and on as to why I feel as though academia sometimes needs to kind of chill and take a step back from art, but this is not in the scope of today's podcast. I've talked about that in the past, and you can always check out the I Don't Need Your Fucking Permission episode, which is apparently a pretty popular episode amongst you guys and amongst the internets, and just find out exactly how I feel about academia and art mixing. So, just to make a long story short, I wasn't going to do my Shakespeare project within the program, but now I actually am, because my advisor is pretty much a Shakespeare expert, and if anyone is going to at least help me to understand the history, the context, the just all the ins and outs of Shakespeare and his works, like, she is going to be that person, and it would just give me a chance, not necessarily to bring the artistic part of my project into the program, but to really lock down my historical and dramaturgical understanding of Shakespeare, his four plays, and how those works have been interpreted by other people, and just looking at like what sort of research, scholarship, and common conversations have to say about Shakespeare is important. You know, in order to really make an adaptation that I feel is successful, you should know the source material very well. Even if you don't really care about the historical context around it, which you probably should, but that's up to you if you're an artist, you should at least know the source material pretty well so that you are making deliberate, intentional decisions around what you choose to include and what you choose to depart from in your interpretation of the work. So, basically, I'm using my master's thesis to develop a deeper understanding of the source texts, of these four source texts, so that when it comes time to actually adapt these four texts into something different and new and fresh and awesome, like maybe like a sci-fi noir version of Shakespeare's tetralogy or an Afro-futuristic version of Shakespeare's tetralogy, I will have that integral knowledge of the source texts so that I know like what's originally going on, like what the relationships are between the people in the text, the themes, the characters, the plot, and then I can make my own independent decisions based on that information, and decide what I want to keep, what I want to throw away, what I want to highlight, what I want to decrease focus on, and I can find out more about what I want to say with my work. Because even though I don't feel as though artists necessarily have to have intent or have to have a sort of mission behind their work, you don't have to have that. For me, my work is stronger when I have something that I actually want to say. And I personally, even outside of this program and completely separate from my academic studies, in my own work, like my sci-fi novels, all of my projects, even the horror movie that I'm working on right now, Sandman, at core, they're all trying to say something, or they're testing a theory that I personally have, or, they're launching some sort of social thought project or thought experiment that I think is interesting and important to think about sociologically and culturally. So, and even though, like, I don't use my novels or my films or whatever to preach from a moral standpoint, I do want to ask interesting questions. And this, me seeing Altered Carbon, as you guys would have heard me talk about in the last podcast, only underscores the my philosophy on having something to say with your work, but also making something kick-ass and fresh and new and sexy. So those things are important to me. And I think just working on the Shakespearean tetralogy with an actual Shakespearean expert and with a committee of people who can continue to grow my knowledge and challenge me on the historical and cultural and scholarship aspects of my interpretation of Shakespeare, that is great. By the time I'm done with my thesis, I will have developed a really strong knowledge and expertise in Shakespeare. And then as an artist, after I've bid this program farewell and done a peace out, I can then go and do what I want with that knowledge in the background, supporting what I'm trying to do. So long story short, did that for graduate school in the past 2 weeks. Just been generally keeping up with my homework, taking these massive period styles architecture tests, which I've been passing with flying colors, thank God, but it's just been crazy. I know so much more about architecture that I don't even know I ever wanted to know. So that's been interesting. And then, as I mentioned before, it's continuing to inform my knowledge and my aesthetic sort of interpretation of the world. And it's also informing the aesthetic perspective I have on my own sci-fi and fantasy work. Like, we just covered Art Nouveau a few days ago, and it really is helping me to think about the aesthetic of a novel series that I'm working on. As you guys know, the Asylum series. And I'm really liking the sort of craziness that my brain is putting together, but between dystopian, brutalist architecture and art and aesthetic, and mashing that up with some kind of interesting Art Nouveau that kind of represents the spiritual and metaphorical aesthetic of what I'm trying to do. So, like, the period styles architecture class continues to surprise me with how much it influences and builds up my creative well with regard to my sci-fi and fantasy work. So I'm super excited about that. And as much as I want the semester to be over, I do look forward to learning more about new art styles, architectural styles, crafts, and motifs, because it really plays a huge role into how I world build, essentially. It's been really great for my world building acumen. So I love that. I might actually develop my own course at the Bohemian Badass around using architecture to help you build worlds. That's a good idea. I'll jot that down. Let me actually just jot that down right now so I don't forget. Sorry, give me 1 second. Okay, using architecture and architectural history to inform world building. Make a course. Okay, let's get back to it. I just had to write it down because otherwise I'd forget it. I have so much in my brain that I can't remember. Let's see what else. Teaching, that's actually ratcheting up quite a bit, because we not only have weekly screening papers for this one TA ship, but then we have the big giant final paper that requires us to give more in-depth feedback and then do a back and forth with the students. So that's coming. And then we have the same thing happening in our theater appreciation course that I'm TAing for. So that's going to be a challenge, balancing all that work. I'm not looking forward to it, not going to lie, but it is what it is. Dramaturgy has had some interesting lessons for me. And I have been working with 3 playwrights. It's actually come down to 2 now for this erasure project and play festival that we're putting together at the University of Arizona. And it's been a very interesting process. And I'm loving the plays that I'm working on. I'm loving the playwrights that I have worked with, both for this project and just generally, the people I've been meeting, the ideas that they have, and the beauty with which they write. makes me kind of feel like, do you really need a dramaturg? Do you really need me in your life? But I'm glad that they feel supported and helped and assisted. We just finished the first round of note giving conversations and then follow up notes being given for these 10-minute plays that we are dramaturging, and I am super excited about the work that is coming out of this. So, you know, we're gonna see where that takes us, but I still have two more rounds of edits to go, and that is going to be very time consuming, but also rewarding in the moment. But even though I am, what I realize about myself as a dramaturg is that I really enjoy working on these particular plays, and I enjoy being of assistance to other Black playwrights and playwrights of color who are trying to get their experiences out there on the stage. I am here for it. But I did realize, especially in the course of directing as well, and comparing that to dramaturgy, that I find directing personally much more fulfilling than dramaturgy. And that's not because I don't feel as though I want to help playwrights, but it's just that the kind of work and emotional labor that dramaturgy requires, for me personally, is a little intense, and I would prefer to like reserve that emotional labor for like one playwright at a time, as opposed to all these playwrights all at once, because you really do need to get to know the playwright. You do need to get to know the past that they're dealing with, the context, the emotional core of everything that they're writing about. And sometimes a lot of that can be very personal, and there's nothing wrong with that, but when you're having like these deep, soul-searing, personal relationships with people, it can feel a little bit emotionally draining at times. Just kind of like think about it. How often do you have like, you know, four, quote, soul-searing, deep, intimate connections like all at once? That's not usually how life works. And I realize that dramaturgy, at least in the way I'm being taught it, requires a sort of connection and emotional vulnerability that is not only hard to achieve just with one person, you know, but is hard to achieve sometime in the time frame that is required for this particular project. And so for future endeavors, if I'm going to dramaturg anyone and have to put that emotional, just everything and effort and energy into a project, I think I would prefer to put that energy into relationships that have already been established and wherein I know the playwright relatively well, so that the connection doesn't feel as like forced, immediately forced. And this is not to say I don't have a connection with my playwrights. I do, but it's like I was kind of forced to like know them inside and out, like off the bat within a week. And it just kind of flies in the face of how relationships develop naturally and organically. And so there is just like a lot of emotional labor involved, a lot of getting inside of people, which is, you know, hard if they don't know you, they've never met you. Sometimes in some cases they don't even trust you with themselves or their work, which is completely understandable. And I just kind of realized that I probably, for a career, I probably will not be going that route. Let's put it that way. I will probably be a dramaturg on a case-by-case basis for people that I know really well, who are already in the field of playwriting, in the sense that they are trying to build themselves and hone their skills as playwrights. That's another thing you have to watch out for as a dramaturg. There are so many playwrights out there who are just very earnest and eager and excited to have opportunities, but a lot of them do not have the experience required to bang out a draft, or they don't consistently work on their writing the way that they're supposed to because they haven't quite found themselves as playwrights yet. They're sort of just dipping their toes and they're kind of dilettantish about the playwriting thing. And you don't ever want to be stuck in a position where you're teaching someone playwriting, where you have to constantly check in on them to make sure that they're actually sitting down to write. that's something that you should probably not have to do as the dramaturg, because as a playwright, for somebody who is passionate about playwriting, you know, they should really be able to bring themselves to the page. And so luckily I haven't had any experiences at this point that at all indicate that I need to teach anybody how to write plays, and I wouldn't be the person to learn from at this juncture anyway, because I'm still learning myself. So, which is why at my other brand, The Bohemian Badass, I'm not teaching playwriting. I'm teaching novel writing, and I'm teaching screenwriting and teleplay writing. And when I start actually making my own films and TV episodes, then I'll teach filmmaking and film production and TV production. That's why I focus on the things that I focus on right now at my other brand, because those are the things that I know well, and I would never try to teach anyone something that I myself don't feel confident in and I don't feel experienced in. So those are a couple of things that, you know, you guys should pay attention to. If you're thinking about being dramaturgs, realize that in some cases it can be a lot of not just intellectual labor and physical labor of like you sitting there and just typing up endless notes and having endless conversations, but it can also be a lot of emotional labor, and sometimes you might not feel like doing that labor. And I just know it's not the kind of labor that is for me. Directing can also be a lot of emotional labor, but I've discovered that it's a very different kind of emotional labor. I'll get into that in just a second so that you guys can see sort of the differences between my experiences. But in conclusion, great experiences with amazing playwrights, with amazing plays. And I think I've been a really great dramaturg thus far, and I really am helping them to take their plays to a different level, I hope. But I also realize that dramaturgy as a career, as an identity, is not really for me, and I will not be identifying as such in the future. Although I will say that learning dramaturgy and gaining dramaturgical skills have certainly played a major role in making me a better director and also just a better writer, like for novels, for screenplays. Like, I can feel myself getting honed, and I'll talk more about that again when I get to directing. So for writing, I am focused specifically on writing one particular project. It is called right now The Camille, and it finally has a title, y'all, and it is the story that I am writing for the four author collaboration in the book called 2054. And I'm super excited. I got over 5,000 more words done for the piece, and I have just a couple thousand more words to go before I'm done with a full draft. So I'm excited about that. It will probably be a little longer than it should be, and I'm going to be trying to work on it more this week. But the ultimate final deadline for a final finished draft is going to be April 10th for all of us. And what I'm trying to do is, and who knows how this will work, but by the end of this week, not only have the first draft done, but also have a second draft done, as well as a blurb available for my co-collaborators, because we're all trying to read each other's works, be familiar with each other's works, and then drop Easter eggs in each of our stories that hark back to not only other stories in the book 2054, but to like other overarching series. So that's exciting. That's actually coming along. And I have been focused specifically on that story this entire month, and have thus far written generally, oh man, I actually did pretty well this month, 12,000, 15,000. I've written already over 20,000 words for the month of March. And I'm hoping that I can hit at least 30,000 words by the end of the month, which means that overall I would have put in about 1,000 words a day, which is exactly where I want to be. But by the end of this month, I'm crossing my fingers, I will have a finished story which will go into our 2054 book, and then by the end of April, the latest, I'll have an actual book coming out that you guys can purchase and read, and it's going to be sexy and amazing. So that's going really well. It's not going as quickly as I would like it to go, but it's going, and it's definitely going to get done, and I'm excited. The Bohemian Badass, because I've been so busy with directing, I haven't been as directly focused on The Bohemian Badass as I want to be, but I have actually gotten quite a bit done. For one, you guys know that I'm currently enrolled in the ByRegina.com Make it's called Publish Your Thing. That's the entire course, and it's a 13-module course to help you literally take a business idea from nothing to literally like a well-oiled machine that will help you to build a lifestyle, you know, either service-based business or products-based business. It basically is like the best course I've ever taken. Money very well invested. And the course Publisher Thing comes with 13 other courses, and actually I believe she's adding two more, so there will be 15 courses available for Publisher Thing. And I mean, like, the modules for this huge course, like, go from like literally helping you to build your brand and your website, and to like create your blogging business plan, to actually like getting you started on like your blogging business or your infopreneur business, to helping you to like learn how to do graphic design and make amazing images, which is what Regina calls like a visual arsenal, because she, like, her business is so epic and amazing, and she works so hard. And if I can even take a fraction of what she does for her own business at byregina.com and marshal that into a super machine for The Bohemian Badass, and then marshal that again for sexying up my author brand, either at the end of this year or next year, I'm going to be in a really great place to be able to live a wonderful, flexible life that will allow me to support myself very comfortably, and also be really present for my daughter. You know, I would love to just have that home-based, lifestyle-based business that allows me to go to all of her field days, all of her field trips as a chaperone, be on the PTA, you know, just things that I've always wanted as, like, you know, a mom. Even though I wasn't planning on being a mom, I do know that I want to be very involved with my child's education and with her day-to-day activities, and be able to do things like go to her games on weekends or recitals or whatever it is she's into when she gets older, and not have to like roll out of bed on a Saturday and report at 6 a.m. to like a job. And I'm not condescending to that at all. I respect anybody who has like a hustle, who's doing what they have to do to raise their family. And if I have to do that, then I will. But I would prefer to own my own business and run The Bohemian Badass, build my author brand, and then expand all those things into Rebel Ragdoll, which is, as you guys know, my media fempire in progress. So that course by Regina.com is really helping me to take The Bohemian Badass through an entire revamp, and it's just beautiful. I mean, she teaches you how to host online events. She teaches you how to create your first challenge, you know, which is like sort of like a course, sort of like an obstacle course for your subscribers. She teaches you how to do like webinars, how to make your first signature course, how to write and self-publish your first book, which I've already done, but I still am interested in seeing what she does, because she does a lot of workbooks and nonfiction books, which I have not done yet. So I'm looking forward to learning a lot on that front. And so as I've been sitting in that class, I, of course, have been working again on The Bohemian Badass, filling out the website, which is looking great so far, but there's a lot more I have to do, organizing all the things that, you know, need to be done, whether those be on the website or those be on, like, my blog and business plan, which she also, like, gives you an amazing template to use. It's just great. I'm just really enjoying it. I'm not able to work on my business as much as I would like because I'm so busy, but there are times when I give myself like a few hours on the weekend just to kind of separate from graduate school, get centered, get recentered in what I'm here to do, which is to build my business and to be an independent artist. And I do go through some of those modules for her course so that I can continue to build up The Bohemian Badass and prepare for our launch during the summer. So I'm really excited about that. Also, polished up the horror template that I have for Scrivener. Not that that really helps you guys, so I still can't give it to anybody. But I also went and updated the Plot Like a Badass Scrivener template, which I will be offering to you guys as a part of my courses and my workbook offerings that are coming at some point this summer or this fall. At least I'm crossing my fingers. So that's been going well. You know, again, not as quickly as I want, but still going. Typical other stuff, you know, being a mom, adulting, that, you know, just trying to take care of self, that never stops. But I did have to this past week, this past Monday, actually, put my foot down, not in a mean way, but just for myself. There's a particular class that I'm taking this semester that, of all my classes, this is the only class that wherein the professor hadn't at that point quite acknowledged the overwhelm and the major massive workload that I had and my colleagues had. And I was just so overwhelmed that I ended up just not attending this class on Monday. And I just gave myself kind of a me day. This is right after I had my daughter for the weekend too. And I just had to like just kind of sit and be and breathe. And it, and you know, strangely enough, like another one of my colleagues apparently had the same feeling and thoughts. And I ended up just writing a letter to my professor explaining the reasons why I was not going to be able to attend class and why I was feeling overwhelmed. And I did get a positive response. I'm happy about that. But this was for me just another, yet another means of affirmation and validation, telling me that I was doing the right thing by standing up for myself and advocating for myself. And that's so important, guys. Like, no matter what situation you're in, whether it's graduate school, a job, with your family, with your significant other, with your children, with even with yourself, you need to advocate for yourself. And when you're feeling overwhelmed and stressed out and you're about to just crumble, you just need to take a step back. Like, don't push through because that's what people expect you to do. Do what's inside of you. Do what you feel is the right choice for your stability, your emotions, your mental health, and your physical health. That's what I did. And I think finally, after a semester of attempting to communicate these feelings to my professor, finally I was being sort of heard. And I think it's because I was able to articulate myself through text, like not through text message, but like through like writing my emails to this professor. And also because, again, another colleague of ours had a similar inclination. And I think, you know, the fact that neither of us had attended class that day would made the sense of overwhelm extremely clear. And so that was a slightly scary moment because you never know how a professor will respond to you kind of standing up for yourself and putting your foot down. And I'm glad that I got such a great response. And I feel more validated now in how I feel. Because sometimes, as you guys know, as I've talked about on this podcast before, with my program, like the ways in which people do not want to speak up and advocate puts an extra strain and an extra burden on those of us who do. And when I say those of us, I literally mean myself. And I'm just talking specifically about my cohort in my specific track, because we have a general theater arts degree, but there are two tracks. There's the generative dramaturgy track and there's the design tech track. And so I'm mostly with my fellow dramaturgs, and usually it's me advocating for people to kind of step back, to give us what we are due, to please reconsider this, please give us more artistic spaces and time. And it can get very burdensome being the sole advocate all the time. And so this is just another situation where I had to sort of advocate for myself, and it had like a domino effect towards the rest of my colleagues, which is great, I think, but still a lot of pressure on me. Anyway, don't want to go too deep into that. I'm going to spend like the next, you know, 20, 25 minutes talking about directing, because y'all, directing is amazing. I love it. I mean, I've been loving it since I got my first opportunity in January of 2017. And I guess prior to that, I sort of had like a mini opportunity to direct a certain set of readings in our reading series in the fall of 2016. But in terms of working on a project more intimately, directing performances and directly influencing the outcome of a performance, 2017 and especially this year, 2018, has been gangbusters in teaching me so much about directing in different contexts. Like, I've now had the opportunity to like direct and produce slam poetry pieces, readings, and now an actual devised theater piece on stage. And I also, as you guys know, have an opportunity to direct a couple of plays in the fall for our play festival, which I may or may not take. Actually, today we got some interesting news from one of the administrators in our program that directing and being involved in the production is now an option rather than a requirement, which to me is amazing because I do enjoy the fact that we now have these opportunities to direct. And it's really like, I think we're probably the only program in the country that is actively trying to provide opportunities for dramaturgs in a dramaturgy program to direct. And that is great. But up until recently, it felt less like an option than a requirement, which, you know, depending on sort of where you sit on the issue, maybe for some people it doesn't matter. But for me, it does, because unlike everyone else in the program, I'm sort of a non-traditional, I'm going to say that very loosely, non-traditional graduate student, being that I'm a single mother and also being that I have a business slash job outside of this. And I need to give time to those things. I just do. And if I can find a way to make my third year as non-stressful as possible and also get my mommying done, make sure my business is off the ground and running properly, but then also perhaps be able to get yet another final directing opportunity under my belt, then I would love to do that. But I don't want to be forced to do that. And so I'm really relieved that I now have an option. So that may be coming in the fall, or it might not. So putting that out there. But as it stands now, directing is amazing. And I am so excited, like so excited by the kind of work that we've been doing in the studio for the past couple of weeks. It, as you guys know, I've been bringing my daughter to rehearsal with me on the nights that I have her. And she has been a challenge, but also like a really interesting boon and just a source of joy for myself and for the cast and crew. Well, most of them, and sometimes, most of the time, myself. Sometimes she does show her behind a little bit and mommy has to get a little bit, you know, strict. But you know, it is a challenge directing as a single mom with your 3-year-old, 3.5-year-old in the room. I'm not gonna lie, but it's a challenge that I've been able to surmount, and that also, like, the cast and crew has really risen to the occasion themselves with surmounting those challenges and, you know, like seeing what a theater space looks like with a child in it. Like seeing, you know, me showing by example that single moms can do this, and that women can do this and bring their children into this space and be powerful and still have a vision and still run a room and still, you know, connect with her actors with a 3-year-old running around and being sometimes crazy, sometimes cooperative. And the cast themselves and the crew themselves have really just been so welcoming and lovely about it. I've been actually genuinely surprised about the reaction that I've gotten from the cast and crew. And it's possible that some of them are just being nice, but I still appreciate the fact that some of them are being nice. Even if they don't want my daughter there, they're still just being supportive, you know? And I think that's ultimately what compromise amongst artists is about, and what sharing space and holding space for people is about being supportive. And, you know, about like helping that person just feel, welcome. And I don't feel like it's their job to make me feel welcome, but they really have gone out their way to just share in the idea that what I'm doing is totally fine, and we're going to normalize this, and we're going to normalize motherhood in spaces other than the park, the daycare, and the house and kitchen, you know, and I'm just loving it a lot. So that has been a very interesting challenge and place of growth for me. I've also realized that I have a lot of creativity inside of me with regard to how to get the work done, but also keep my daughter entertained. And so we've created moments around her, or with her in them, where she is a part of the theatrical experience and helping out, which is really great. And I'm really just enjoying it. And so, yeah. Although I'm not going to lie, it is extra energy, and I will be very happy when we conclude the rehearsal process. It's extra energy. I'm not going to front on that. But we are all just making the best of the situation, and the situation is actually not bad at all. It's just different. So that's one part, mothering and directing at the same time. Interesting experience. But for the rest of the week, for Wednesdays and Thursdays, I'm off on Fridays, thankfully. We have been doing some really incredible work in the room. We've been using a technique called moment work that's being taught by our professor. And it's sort of his thing that he came up with. And I sucked at moment work and devising in my last semester. And I probably still kind of suck at it, to be honest, a little bit. But I suck a whole lot less than I did before. And I'm actually really proud of the moments I've been making in the room. And I'm even prouder of the moments and the work that the cast is making in the room. I mean, I just love our cast so much, you know. Even the ones with the bigger personalities, which is a nice way of saying the brats. We actually don't really have any brats, but, you know, some of us do have slightly bigger personalities, and that's totally fine with me. I welcome all. Even with those instances, we still have a really amazing cast, a really amazing crew, people who have just been so supportive of us and of the process and are patient with the process. And are just like embracing the fact that devising and moment work is messy, and sometimes we don't know always what we're doing, but we're gonna figure things out. And every time, like, I've started with a moment or just an idea, there have always been other people in the room, either my dramaturgs or even crew or the other cast members, who help build that moment and build those ideas with me together. And that was a really powerful thing for me. And it's just been so much fun. I don't like the hours, I'm not gonna lie, because we, unfortunately, because of the school schedule, we could only do rehearsal from 6 to 10 every night, which is wreaking literal havoc on my sleeping patterns. And it's kind of showing in my energy and, you know, things like that. But I still do look forward to being in the studio space and in the room and doing more work. So for the past 2 weeks, we've just been playing around with props, lighting, sound, costuming, the architecture of the space. What other elements? Oh, I've been sort of holding off on introducing text, because text is a major element of the stage. But we've been just making just really great, like, dynamic moments and images that I believe really are going to make it into the show. So that's been really great. And the one thing I have learned the most about, well, the two things I've learned the most about, one, I really care about my cast and my crew and how they feel. I sort of knew that in the back of my mind, but then when I come into the room, I always want to get a beat on how my actors are feeling for the day, how my crew is feeling, the things that they learned, the challenges that they had with the last rehearsal, so that we can address those challenges and sort of build that rapport and those relationships. I've learned that I have no problem being vulnerable in front of my actors and letting them know, hey, devising is not my shit. Like, I'm a hardcore Aristotelian writer and director. When I leave theater, I will have definitely gained a lot of experience and more tools in my devising slash experimental theater toolbox, but I will probably leave here being very Aristotelian with those tools at hand to create some interesting things in relationships between the actors. I have learned that it's okay for me to be vulnerable and say, devising is out of my wheelhouse. So we're just going to come together. We're going to learn. I'm still going to like lead you because I have a little bit more experience with it at this point. But I want you to feel like you have a sense of ownership in this space, like your ideas are being heard, that you are welcome to develop and build moments of your own that will make it into the show. Like, I have just made it very clear that I want my actors to own the process. And like I said, I knew that I was kind of this director a year ago, like the actor's director, as opposed to a total auteur. I have some auteur elements about my directing style, but mostly I focus on trying to like building actor performance and comfort. And I knew that, but being in the room made me really realize that, yes, this is who I am. Or this is like a part of who I am as a director. And then I realized too that like when I have a vision, I have no problem calling shots and moving bodies in space, which is the auteur side of my directorness, right? Like when I want to see something and when I want to build a moment and I know exactly where I want to go, I'm like, okay, actor one, you move here. Actor two, you move there. Hit the light here. Strike this, strike that. I want you to say this here. I want you to try this and see how it feels. How did that feel to you? What do you think needs to change? Does it need to stay the same? You know, I just feel like very empowered in the room and in the space. So yeah, I'm just excited. I'm learning a lot. I'm getting more comfortable with the idea of directing. I'm super happy that I had this experience and that I will then have the summer to think back on this experience and then develop my knowledge even more on directing. And then truth be told, I probably will be doing the fall directing opportunity, but you know, we'll see what happens. I'll see how I feel towards the end of the summer. So, yeah, I mean, and I'm super glad I'm doing all this before I am directing Sandman, because I think had I just jumped into Sandman cold, I would have totally flopped and fell on my face, period. But now I'm getting all these really great positive experiences in the theater space with a really great cast and a great set of colleagues and my dramaturgs and co-directors. And my confidence is being built and my skill set is being built. The one thing that I do need to work on is my theater terminology. Like, I can now do upstage, downstage directions, but as for stage left and stage right and upper stage right or upper stage left, I still sitting, you know, facing my actors, still get confused with the stage directions. You know, I think stage right is my right. And it's not. If I'm sitting like this and the actors are like directly across from you on the stage, stage right is essentially, you know, the opposite of your right. But I've just never been good at like directionality and like space, like spatial awareness. I always like get lost. So that's like my major weakness, like as a person. So I'm just trying to work on that. And then trading in film terminology for theater terminology. Like in theater, when you're changing the lights, you say lights changing. But in film, when you tell somebody you're turning a light on and off, you call out striking. And so I'm used to that. So I'll say striking. And thankfully, my actors are not complaining about me just being a total film head. But they're starting to learn film terminology as well, which I think is helpful if they're going to act between both mediums. But I still need to like really learn the language of the space. I just like need to get it all the way together. So that's the thing this week. And then I'll get to like the lesson before I go. This week, what we're going to be working on, because we did a lot of moment work these past 2 weeks, and working on images with lighting, shadow, gels, and we worked on actual like moments with just like sound and no text, sort of meaningful dynamic change and representing that on the stage with metaphor or whatever. We did that for the past 2 weeks and we played, but now because we only have 3 full weeks of rehearsal with a final week with tech, 2 dress rehearsals, and then the performances, we literally only have a 3-week block to lock all of this down. So I have to this week finish the script, a more modernized version of the script, because things have changed a little bit for the show. And basically, I would like to do a reading tomorrow at tomorrow's rehearsal. So I can hear the script, change it, slim it down, fix certain things, recast people, etc. And we will also be working on a hip-hop medieval mix rap song about Morian's entire journey from when Lancelot and Gawain first set out on the road and meet Morian all the way to the end. So we're literally making music, writing a song. We will probably have DJ turntables, which is going to be great. And then we also have a script that the Morian storyline is going to be following. So that is going to be the work for this week. Locking down the script, getting a first draft of the lyrics, getting music samples, and just getting text on paper and then in the room so that actors can start to work on their lines and their performances and stuff like that. Then the week after, everything will be locked, officially locked down, script and song and music included. And then we're gonna keep working on staging, blocking, building moments around the text. And then the final week will be essentially us locking the entire show after me and my other co-dramaturgs put our storylines together in ways that make sense. We will then probably be running the show for the entire week. And then actors have to be off book literally in almost like a little over 2 weeks. So it's just a lot going on in 3 weeks. And it's really a ridiculously short amount of time that we have to lock down an entire performance. But it is what it is. We're just going to hit the pavement and just do it and just get it done. It's going to be amazing. The one thing that I do wish I had done, and this gets to the lesson part of the podcast, which is probably only going to be about like 5 to 10 minutes long, thankfully, is that at the beginning of the semester, I came into the room with a very strong vision of what I wanted Morian's storyline to be, what I wanted the moments to look like, and the fact that I wanted this to be a hip-hop medieval mashup. And even with all those visions pretty much locked in my mind, I still left it open and flexible enough for moments to emerge from my own storyline and also for theater moments to emerge and then intersect with my storyline. You know, those moments that were coming from my colleagues. You know, there was room for me to speak to my colleagues' work through Morian's storyline so that the show looked coherent. And I knew that about myself. And instead of following my own instincts and just writing out the script ahead of time, you know, getting the lyrics or some sample lyrics written down and doing that, I instead listened to my supervisor, who at the time was constantly trying to, quote, keep me in check. Because for whatever reason, I think prior to this show, I don't know if there was a fear of me taking over the show or if there was a fear of us vying for power or whatever. Like there were definitely some insecurities and some fears on behalf of our supervisor with regard to what I was bringing into the room and with regard to what I was envisioning for my portion of the show. Like he wouldn't even let me call my portion of the show my portion of the show because he was afraid that I was coming into the process thinking it was my entire show. This is just another example as to how a lot of people here and in other places respond to the things that to who I am, as opposed to the things that are actually coming out of my mouth. And so there were a lot of assumptions made and a lot of conclusions jumped to about what I was trying to do in the beginning. And because I know myself well enough to know that I am strong in my vision, but I'm also extremely democratic when it comes to what works in the room and what's not working in the room, I should have followed my instincts to do all of that work up front, because essentially I ended up listening to my supervisor not to my detriment. He has some great ideas, but I'm back at the same place I was literally 2 months ago with the same vision, the same storyline, and the same aesthetic point of view, which is that this is going to be medieval hip-hop rap musical mashed up with a contemporized retelling and revelation of Morian's storyline. And so now I'm sort of in this position where I could have done all of this work ahead of time where I had more time in my schedule, but I did not because I was listening to other voices that were not my inner voice. And now I'm stuck this week with zero time having to bang out a script and also having to start to bang out lyrics for the storyline when I could have been working on that the whole time. So the lesson in that, y'all, is to always, yes, stay open to what your superiors or, you know, betters or the experts are saying you should do. Like, don't just close off your ears and not listen to anything that they have to say, especially if they've been in the business longer than you have. But having that inner compass and following it is also super important. Even if you don't tell your supervisor or your colleagues where exactly you've been and where you've planned to go. Like, if you decide that you're going to go do your own thing anyway, do it in silence and in secret so that at the end of the day, if you're in my position where you're stuck or where you're stuck in a situation where you have to, like, basically do what you were planning to do the entire time, except now you have to do it on, you know, speed 10, you don't have to be crazy and be in a time crunch or be in a tough spot because you were so busy listening to everybody else's vision and not listening to your own. I should really be sitting here, sitting pretty and feeling good about myself and just saying, okay, well, this is great that we're back at the same position that we were before. Here's a finished script that I did like 2 months ago, and here are the lyrics to my song that I wrote again 2 months ago. Now we have an actual draft, and all we're going to be doing is editing. But instead, I have to do all this from scratch on like zero time because I was listening to other people and not listening to my instincts and not following what I know about myself. And that's sort of a downfall of people who listen to authority figures all the time without any regard to how they feel. Authority figures, unless they're your parents, you know, for the most part, generally don't know you nearly as well as you know yourself. So, you know, this following authority is probably more helpful in certain situations than in this situation, like with artists. But in my situation, I should not have been sort of absorbing the perspective of someone who didn't really know me as well as I knew myself. And they could only give me the advice that they could come up with based on the limited information about me that they had. And I have all the information about me that's available. So I should have made my decision based on that information, not on my supervisor's information. And in saying this, I'm not trying to demonize my supervisor at all. You know, he's been really great during the process. I think once he saw us in action and producing such strong work that he was able to kind of let go and step back and breathe and relax a little bit. And he didn't feel the need to micromanage so much, which is great. And I think we really earned his trust. But I should have had more confidence in my own vision to begin with and just led with that. Because the strongest moments I've made have been the same moments I've been thinking about since I even knew I was doing Morian. Like, the moments that are making it into the show as of now are those moments I planned 2 months ago. And they were really powerful moments, and I really enjoyed it, enjoyed making them in the room. So having said that, long story short, follow your instincts is all I'm trying to say. There was another point that I wanted to make about directing. Let's see. Well, if I forgot it, it either means that I'm tired or it wasn't that important of a point. But that's mainly the lesson is, you know, stay open and follow your instincts because no one can really execute your vision better than you can. I guess they can make it look nicer. Like, you can put your vision out there and they can give advice as to how to make the vision clearer and, you know, how to make it starker But, you know, you have to trust in your own voice and in your own unique perspective. And you also just need to really know yourself. Before you start getting, you know, well-versed in all the things that you need to know as a director, whether you're in film or in theater, you know. So before you start learning lighting and, you know, imagery and staging and blocking and how to develop actor performances, you really have to understand who you are as a person and learn about that person in the room with actors, with designers, and figure out sort of who you are and what your vision is and what your what your unique perspective is on art and on projects. And I know what mine is. And I denied myself access to that vision because I was being told by someone else that, like, I needed to put that on the back burner. And now, again, we're back in a position where we're looking for clarity. We're looking to lock a storyline down. And I have one that I could have written months ago, but I didn't because I was listening to other people. So anyway, that's the moral of my story. I want to let you guys know, though, that I generally am super enjoying directing. The best part of it is really working with the cast members. They're really amazing. They're really patient. They're really kind. They're really excited and eager and just, you know, just on point. And I look forward to seeing how this week is going to shake out. It's going to be a super busy week. And they're even going to get in on some of the writing and the song lyric writing. So I'm super excited about that. In any case, that is it for my updates, guys. It's been great. I will probably see you guys again in about 2 weeks. I'm giving myself 2 weeks because I don't really know when I'll be back. If I'm back any earlier, consider that to be like a boon. But I will be back no later than April 9th, promise. Okay, so I will talk to you guys soon. Hang in there, keep creating, stay true to yourself and your vision. Keep being badass, and I will talk to you guys in a couple of weeks. Bye.